good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And without further ado, or more silliness, we've had some technical mamma jamma today. That's a radio term.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's radio talk.
Yeah, mamma jamma. So our guest is Mike Costello. He is with Howl for Wildlife, and their little thing here kind of says it all. We educate the public, both non-hunting and hunting, about the cultural, economic, ecological, conservation, and sustenance sides of hunting. We then give people the tools to take action on hunting, fishing, and conservation issues. And I got to say, it's an organization you should plug in with. They have a lot of information. Their website's great. I don't know who did that for you, Mike, but it's terrific. And you can click on I swiped some of it, and I put it on so the links were there in case somebody didn't want to make the jump. But this show is airing originally on March 2nd, 2025. So if we replay it later, you'll know what was going on at the time. But, you know, you've got links here. The ones I snagged for today's show out of your lineup, thoughts on predator reintroduction, benefits of all species, the predator hunting, balancing nature for the benefit of all species, the role of hound hunting, understanding a time-honored tradition and its contributions to wildlife management. And that is a biggie. We should really talk about that because that was a crushing blow to a lot of people and a lot of animals. I don't think people realize the devastation on the dogs. Equal Access to Justice Act, eco-litigation, and judicial interference, how the abuse of the system undermines real wildlife conservation. And if the Equal Access to Justice Act, the EAJA, is not a familiar term to you, I don't care who you are, it should be familiar to you because that is how environmental groups basically fundraise, sue and settle. And we're talking, you know, if you live anywhere that's had a fire, so now we can include L.A., because of land management, EAJA is the rat in the wood pile on that one. Another link here, A Path Forward, Undoing the Damage of Ballot Box Biology. I look at it and I can't pronounce it. Ballot Box Biology, I really want you to talk about that too. And then Humans, a Part of the Natural Balance, Rethinking, Let Nature Take Care of Itself. Ugh. God, how many times have we heard that? So we'll, of course, have to do, you know, more programming with you in the future. But
there's a lot to unpack.
Because that was kind of a long list. But honestly, I kind of wanted to, because not everyone goes to the website. Sometimes people listen. Sometimes people just listen to the archive. Maybe you don't listen to the archive. We make a lot of effort with the We the People Radio website to give you enough so that if you just want to go find out about the issue and maybe you don't want to listen, there's enough on the page that you can get smarter on that. So,
yeah.
Talk about the dogs so we don't lose them in the mix. The hound hunting.
Yeah, hound hunting. It's so easy to. First of all, the anti-hunting industry, they'll go after, I call it the low-hanging fruit, they go after the segments of the hunting and outdoors community that's the smallest and easiest to divide up, you know, create a division from them and others. And so the use of hounds and the use of dogs across all forms of hunting has been part of the human tradition for thousands of years. We domesticated dogs primarily to have hunting partners, you know, thousands of years ago. That was the primary purpose. It wasn't so we could have a fluffy animal, you know, in our tent or our teepee or you know, cave. It was so that we would have a partner in hunting. And so dogs across most breeds had some function for pursuit or retrieval of animals. And that is largely lost, except for within some communities of people that still cherish that practice. They develop and maintain breeds that are specifically just hardwired to pursue animals or to retrieve animals for us. And there's nothing that the anti-hunting industry would like to do more than eliminate that. And when I say eliminate, they would like to eliminate not just in the use of hounds to pursue and tree bears and mountain lions, but they want to eliminate it to the point where we couldn't even use dogs to retrieve waterfowl that we've shot out of the sky. And so it's a very serious threat. And I've never run hounds before. I haven't done it. I haven't pursued a lion or a bear, you know, following hounds through the woods. But I've seen enough of it to know it is incredibly physical, incredibly difficult. And the hounds community, the houndsman community has a tremendous affection and love for their dogs.
Oh, yeah.
And those two things are the things that the anti-hunters turn on their head. They say that it's cruel to the dogs, and they say that it's easy for the humans. Like, we just pull up in the truck and hop out, and lo and behold, our dogs are right there with a mountain lion in the tree, and we shoot it.
Yeah, right.
It's not remotely that easy. The dogs will pursue an animal over miles and miles of difficult terrain. And a lot of houndsmen that do practice this, they actually will tree and free the majority of the animals that they catch. The majority of the bears that are treed are then let go and freed. The majority of the mountain lions that are treed are let go and freed. And so they love the pursuit, and they love the adventure and the physicality of it. And then also learning about those animals that they're pursuing. They're not killing every one of them, not by a huge margin. And so it's important, I think, that we all, before we say, oh, that's bad, that we actually get to know what's happening.
Yeah.
Before we just condemn it. Like, we all need to be open to the idea that this is something new. Maybe it's cultural. Maybe it's heritage. It's a practice that we're not familiar with, and we need to be ready to support it until we have any other reason not to.
Well,
they're going after it.
They are. And the other part of the story that was really, has always been very interesting to me about that particular practice with houndsmen, besides the fact they love their dogs, that the hounds, that's their job. Like, mm-hmm. like that's what God made them to do. And so when you prevent that and expect them to just, well, now they're just going to hang out around the house, the dogs go
right.
berserk. And I heard from many houndsmen that they had to put their dogs down because the dogs couldn't, they just couldn't
adapt to.
Yeah. That
right.
was their thing.
Domestic.
Because I think, and I'm not an expert on this at all, but, and it's been a while, but didn't they say you can't have dogs out there in the woods, like running? That it's against the law now in California that if the dogs chase animals around, isn't there a big thing about that? Wasn't that part of it?
Well, there's wildlife harassment, and so if you have a dog that just randomly pursues a deer, that is considered wildlife harassment, and that's against the law. It's an infraction, but. Pursuit of lions and bears specifically is not legal because it's considered hunting with hounds.
Right.
The houndsmen in California still chase raccoons, and I don't know if they can chase foxes or not. So there are still a community of houndsmen in California that do breed and keep, you know, hounds for the purpose of going after animals. But the two, you know, bobcats, so the three bobcats, mountain lions, and bears were the three larger species that were most commonly pursued. And, those are illegal now. We do have, and if you got to our action center, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because these laws were passed either through ballot box biology or through the legislature.
So you know, tell
they
people
by the commission.
Yeah, tell people about the ballot box biology because that strikes home with me. But I deal in that for work.
So yeah, in most states you have a commission and a department. The commission is a group of, you know, say 5 to 9 people that have a charter to curate the laws related to wildlife and hunting and whatnot. Then you have the department. They go out and enforce the laws. They administer the hunting programs. They do the science and the research. That's where most regulations should come from. Those are the experts in the field. They've got the best knowledge and they've got the charter to do this work. when the ballot, when some people go to the legislature and say, hey, legislature, I don't like what's going on over there in the commission, so I'm going to ask you, I'm going to lobby you to make a law. Even though you're not as informed and you're not as close to the issue, I'm going to lobby you to make a law. And I think that's bad. Worse yet is when the legislature won't even pick it up. And you take this very emotional issue sometimes and go to the ballot box. You just put it on the ballot as an initiative, and you ask people that are completely unremoved from the participation, from the issues, from the science, and you can paint a very emotional picture of something and completely skew the public perception, you know, for a period of a month to get people to write, you know, fill in a bubble on their ballot about something that they generally don't think about 364 days a year. And so that's where you get really bad outcomes for wildlife. You get bad outcomes for hunting opportunity, bad outcomes for conservation. And we've had that a lot here in California, primarily with the mountain lion hunting ban that took place in 1990. So that's, we were in Colorado last year a bunch trying to protect mountain lion hunting successfully, and we successfully did. From a ballot box initiative. And there were people in the streets that literally would say, why am I even voting on this? You know, like, why am I being asked to choose this? Don't we have a department that regulates this already?
Yeah, isn't there actual science?
Yeah, and we said, bingo, that's exactly it. Why are you voting on this? You do have a department that decides this with science. And so they got it. They realized that they were effectively in Colorado. That proposition was trying to manipulate their knowledge, manipulate their emotions to have them vote for something that couldn't otherwise be put in place through the department, the commission, or even the legislature. So, you know, we don't do ballot initiatives on, you know, speed limits and air traffic control.
No.
Or brain surgery. So we shouldn't
well,
be doing ballot initiatives.
It's really crazy because even back when they listed wolves in California in 2015, at that meeting, and I said this the other night, that the Fish and Game Commission, the Fish and Game Department, so the department of that said, we don't think you should list them. Their recommendation was not to list them. But
wow.
I know. I thought that was pretty weighty. Actually, Chuck Bonham, not necessarily part of the fan club here, but he said, I think it's a bad idea. But then you had like the lady I described with the wolf hat. I should post a picture of that on the website. It's just crazy. She got up there and said, you know, she wanted, please, you have to list them. You have to endanger them. You know, I want my 3-year-old to meet one in the backyard one day. Mm. Have the joy of meeting one in the backyard. I thought, wow. Yeah.
It's going to be a short meeting.
Child Protective Services all the way. So just, you have people who don't have any knowledge. But then the other part we're leaving out is the science that's just flat cooked. I mean, they just lie about
right.
it. And,
right.
And as we learned, as we have recently learned, 10 years into the listing of wolves in the state of California, they have not decided how many wolves is enough wolves.
Yeah, that's the part
right.
that gets me, is they don't have a plan for when enough is enough.
They don't have an end point. So
and that brings up a good point. What maybe you can help me with
how
this.
Which is enough?
how fast do they populate? I mean, if they drop 2 or 3 pairs in an area, how fast does that population grow?
I think in Idaho, using that as one benchmark, in Idaho, they went from 100 to about 350 in 2 to 3 years, and then they got over 600 in, I think, another 2 years.
Oh,
so they can get to a point where the recolonization process starts very slow, and then it can hit an exponential growth curve, and then that curve only flattens out when they start hitting saturation for whatever habitat that they're in.
Right. As long as there's food on the ground, they're going to keep growing.
Which might have been why it took us 100 years to eradicate them.
Yeah, space to expand into and food on the ground. And if the food includes, you know, human-provided food like livestock, California is a big state. And there's a lot of livestock and a lot of you know, goats and sheep and dairy cattle and calves. And so like, we have, that's where I stood in front of the commission in December and said wolf management plan, I think for the first time in the commission space in the last few years. Like, we have a problem. Like, we really do. I think we really have an ecosystem problem, and it's coming.
Yeah.
We didn't get ahead of the forest fire and the wildland fire problem. People knew that was coming. It was called. It was predicted. And it happened. And now people think, oh, yeah, forestry management is good. We need that. And so there's support for that now that we've had the crisis.
Right.
We have an ecosystem crisis coming, and it is a complete lack of management across multiple apex predators, which is only going to be exacerbated by wolves recolonizing California.
Yeah.
If only we could get tigers, we could have the Wizard of Oz, right?
Lions, well, another thing you hear these ranchers, if they do have a loss, they get compensated for that. You know, the fishing game will come out and you know, we'll write them a check, you know. So how's that working out?
On that note, we do have to take a quick break, and then we'll come back with the joy of how that works.
Okay.
Because that is something the public should know. And it does come from your tax dollars, and it isn't what you think. So,
right. We
will be right back. And as it would be, I have chosen the perfect song.
You're kidding.
No.
You?
No, to lead into that particular topic. So, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Compliance. We just need your compliance. You will feel no pain anymore. Your compliance, just give us your compliance. We won't let you feel lost anymore. No more self-reliance. Oh, I just try to make believe that everything you're telling me is.
There we go. Got the soundtrack for the compensation plan right there.
There you are.
So, Mike, tell us. You're a cattle rancher, and you've got cattle, and, you know, they decide to overpopulate wolves in your area, and then it's all going to work out for you, though.
Yeah. Well, you know, as a cattle rancher, the first thing I want to do is raise these animals so they can be fed to wildlife.
Fed to
wolves coming onto my property. Like, that's all I really care about. No, I want to flip the script, though, a little bit. I want to ask another question. So folks that live in, you know, basic suburban neighborhoods, you know, 5,000 square foot house, 2-car garage, you know, lawn in the front, let's remove all the front doors.
Yeah.
And let's remove all the back doors and just say, look, it doesn't really matter that people are going to come in your house and steal things, because no matter how traumatizing that is and how invaded you feel, we're going to pay you back for whatever they steal.
Right. You can call the police.
And right. Those people need those things. Those predators, those human predators, they need those things. And so, because they can't provide for themselves on the landscape. And so we're just going to do this thing where you can't protect any of your stuff. And you can't protect any of your boundaries. But don't worry, we'll reimburse you and pat you on the back and tell you that you're made whole. Because that's what's happening in all the rural counties, where you have, well, wolves, but you also have, you don't get reimbursement if you have a mountain lion or a bear take one of your animals or your pet or your dog. So this issue is happening not just with wolves, but throughout the state and every rural, in any community with the urban, with any kind of wildland interface, that you're being told that the critters have more rights than you do. And I think that's just massively flawed.
Yeah. Yeah, it is massively flawed. And then the other part of it that is, which is why, you know, we've given people now over an hour to absorb the idea that that wolves as an apex predator kill for sport. So mm-hmm. they leave these animals maimed. They're not necessarily dead. So
right.
that doesn't count as a, quote, wolf kill. That's right. just an animal that's now got to be put down.
But do you actually get reimbursed? I mean, is that...
Maybe.
Yeah. How difficult is that?
There's a framework. There's a decision-making framework, you know, that they have to go through. Because it's the government, you know, there's going to be a framework. And they have to say, was this a wolf kill? And so they have to determine, you know, there's DNA swabbing, genetic testing, there's paw prints, and they're looking for a number of different data points that they can say it was a wolf killed the family, it might have been, it probably was, or we're not sure. And there's a lot of factors that go into, even if we say that the department has the best of intentions and there's unlimited funds to do this, there's still scientific factors that throw curveballs that make it so it's hard to determine sometimes. But there's not unlimited funds, and there's limited resources from a headcount perspective. There's limited resources from a disbursement perspective. And so the answer, when you get down to the number of depredations of livestock being killed or maimed or gonna die soon because of wolves in the pasture, not everybody's gonna get paid. I think that's just a fact.
Absolutely not. And for the cattle that are just hazed, there was a terrific video, and I'm just sorry it's no longer on the Oregon State University website, where a guy did an experiment, you know, collared a bunch of cattle, a professor collared a bunch of cattle, and they had some wolves that were already collared, and they followed them. You know, how did they interact? And at one point, I'll never forget it, because it was a topographical map that the dots were on, little blue dots were the cows. And those cows were moving at 7 miles an hour up a grade to try to escape the wolves. You know, they were the cattle all, yeah, they're hanging out, you know, out on the open plain, you know, see the blue dots everywhere.
And then all of a sudden.
And then all of a sudden, like, bruh, 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 they get closer and closer and closer and then take off running.
They're being pushed.
Correct. And that has an effect on the livestock producer as well. I mean, if you look at this just from a...
Oh, yeah, they can't be gaining weight and getting fat when they're running all night long. Yeah.
So you're busy destroying that.
Right.
There just is a ton of cost in there. And as a taxpayer, I resent that money that is confiscated from me to pay for things is going into stuff like this without... I don't think most people would be on board with this if they actually knew the entire picture.
And it's going to raise the cost of your beef. It's
Absolutely.
Going to raise the cost of food. It's going to raise the cost of food. And the irony, of course, is so much of what we do in the U.S. is we say, well, we can import it from somewhere else. So we start buying, you know, cheaper beef that's imported from South America. Guess what they did to the wolves in South America? They're all dead. so it's like, okay, well, we'll just import beef from places that haven't reintroduced the apex predators, because they're smart. They're like, well, we wouldn't do that. That would be dumb.
Yeah, right. And they have no controls over how their animals are raised or treated or
right.
dealt with. Look what happened with dog food out of China. You know, they couldn't even make dog food, for God's sake. So what the heck would we want to buy beef from any of these people? But,
you know, there's a move to do, you know, this regenerative agriculture thing. I'm dabbling with the idea of, do I want to get into ranching? And I know there's a lot of people that say you're crazy to think about that, but there's this thing about regenerative agriculture where they talk about, you know, increasing the number of animals per acre, but you move them every day, you're out there, you know, you're stewarding them on the pasture, on, you know, really wild landscapes, you move them every day, and actually they leave the ecosystem behind them better than it was. And that's a great idea, But then you throw in something like, oh, by the way, you need to do this in an area with these apex predators, and you can't do anything about those apex predators.
Yeah, right.
In fact, you should go back to fences and flattery and fox lights and disco balls to keep the apex predators away. Like, which do we want? Do we want to use livestock to do benefit, you know, do ecosystem services on the landscape? Or do you want to put them all in pens to keep them protected with high fences to protect them from apex predators?
Well, we tried that with chickens, and now you got to buy free-range eggs. So, you know, that they aren't going to allow
that. That's the one that'll pull Bill out of a coma.
Yeah.
Free-range chickens. Bill's back.
Yeah. No, I worked very hard to find eggs that aren't free-range eggs.
And, he does, too. He goes crazy.
Like, it just drives me nuts. It's a chicken.
You're the one that wants those?
Bill's like, I hate that free-range egg thing. That's just so stupid.
Yep.
And then I start ranting about flattery. You should go to the store with us. It's really super
fun. Yeah, because I'll tell you what, I've searched long and hard for whale oil, and I can't find it.
And whale oil and tiger meat.
Yeah.
We've looked everywhere, but at Costco, you know, the only endangered species they ever carry is coho salmon.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy, you know. None of the other endangered species are there. good. So,
but it's this payback thing, like, there's a matrix of rules and expectations that just doesn't work. Like, it doesn't pencil. And people, I think when we get to, like, go back to, like, the advocacy thing, so what do we need to do? Like, we need to talk to the people. We can't talk to the ideologically captured people that are just, like the woman that wore the wolf hat in that meeting. Like, we just need to talk to the people that I'm saying, you're going to have your doors and windows removed from your house, and you need to let people come in and steal stuff from you. We need to talk to those folks that think that's crazy, because it is. Well, that's what's being asked of ranchers. That's what's being asked of livestock owners, and that's what's being asked of, you know, people that care for wildlife and, you know, prey species on the landscape. We need to talk to them about stories that are relatable, so they can see, wow, this is really a difficult matrix of requirements. What are some simple solutions that we could do that actually create results? Because I think the solutions are simple. And you don't even have to say you want to exterminate wolves. Like, we just need to be able to put up
boundaries like we had before we let them run the place.
The
thing is, let's say for all those people that, you know, they have deer that come in their backyard or wherever, you know, or they like seeing them out in the, not in the road, obviously, because that's a problem. But just, they like wildlife. Maybe they don't hunt. They don't do any of those things. Maybe they don't even go in the woods, but they like the idea that there's wildlife out there. Hot tip, they're wiping them out too.
Yeah.
Like, they're wiping all of it out.
Yep.
And the more of them there are, the fewer of all those other things there will be. And that doesn't make sense.
Well, I think what really kind of riles people is the fact that when they put these management plans together, they don't take into consideration, they say they do, but they don't take into consideration the impact of dropping, what was it, 12 wolves they just dropped in Plumas County?
Well, they claim that they just captured them, put collars on them, and then let them go again.
They were already there. Yeah.
Those are existing packs, I think.
But people saw that when, you know.
There's an article I just ran across today on MSN it's on the internet. It's called Blue State Ranchers Thrown to the Wolves, Seek President Trump's Rescue. It tries to tell both sides of the story on this. I think they do a fairly decent job on it. But they talk about these issues of ranchers being victimized, I can't believe that it's allowed to continue when they have such overwhelming evidence that their animals are getting slaughtered, and it's they kind of go into some detail about, you know, how these animals are dying, and it's not pretty. I think people need to read the article and get a feel for what's actually happening.
The pictures of what they do to the cattle that they don't kill
and the calves, you know, the small calves. I mean, they don't, they can't defend themselves. I mean, a cow can't defend itself against a wolf, let alone a calf. And they have a hard time accounting when they send these cattle up into the mountain ranges to birth, and they don't come back with all the calves they thought they were going to have. Well,
surprise.
Well, yeah, surprise.
Well, you know, that kind of reminds me, though, that we kind of skipped over the part about with the collaring, besides the fact that you have to keep catching them and putting new batteries in, and they become habituated to human contact, which is obviously not what we want. The other piece of that is the myth way back when was, we're going to collar these animals, and we're going to let you know when they are near your cattle. And that is absolutely a lie. Because they find out days and weeks later, that is never real-time information. So in case somebody out there is thinking, well, they collar them and tell them when they're nearby. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen.
Because they're afraid that they'll be killed, and they don't want that information public, so they don't want people out there looking at them. There's that, too. You know, you have the people who are kind of like the wolf groupies.
Yep.
Yeah.
You mentioned Equal Access to Justice Act. Remember that, so in 2022... United States Fish and Wildlife Services, under Biden, declared that wolves were no longer, they didn't warrant listing under the Endangered Species Act in North America. The Fish and Wildlife Services delisted wolves nationwide, all 48 lower 48 states. And it was a judge, because there was a lawsuit filed by the protectionist preservationist orgs. There was a judge in the 9th District in California that overturned that delisting. So the science has been proven multiple times that wolves warrant delisting. But because you can sue on behalf of the ESA or on behalf of, you know, citizen, you can sue and find a judge that will flip this thing. And then those organizations get paid with taxpayer dollars for bringing the lawsuit because of the EAJA. They're listed again. And so, like, this is not, it's not like it's an, you're not an outlier to say that wolves should be delisted. That's been determined at a scientific level multiple times. So there's multiple reforms there. There's ESA reform that needs to happen. There's the Equal Access to Justice Act reform that needs to happen. And hopefully these reforms can happen here soon with the administration and Congress that we've got. But we've got to be vocal about that and support those things.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean we're going to wipe everything out. It just means we're going to kind of recalibrate. It's very much like California, for anybody who follows crime. We finally got the citizens of California to pass Prop 36. And and the tagline on that was, make crime crime again. You know?
Right.
Like, it's crazy to think that you need to go back to allowing law enforcement to put criminals in jail for committing crimes. But we had to do that because we had gone so far afield with the, I don't know, the whole feel-good movement. Like, oh, if we just, the idea originally was, if we stopped putting all these people in jail, there would be less crime. And it's like, no, there would just be less record of it.
Well, the Bowden issue just got to that point. The ballot initiatives that brought us to that point were completely misrepresented.
Yeah.
So, again, a ballot initiative, you can create three bullet points and a slogan, and they can be complete lies.
I think
it was passed as Save Our Schools.
No,
or,
Save Schools and Streets Act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Who doesn't want Save Schools and
like,
Streets?
You're like, oh, who's going to vote against that?
Exactly.
Nobody read it, and so there's no requirement for them to be appropriately represented in the media or in the literature that advocates for these things. And so same thing with wildlife management. Like, we have undone wildlife management at so many levels in California. One of our visions at Howl is we want to come back with our own version of Prop 36 that takes apart all these rules and regulations and laws that have been constructed outside of the department and the commission, and push all of those things back to the Department and Commission to decide. That's where those decisions to be made. Make wildlife management great again.
Yeah.
You
heard it here first. Yay!
You heard it here first.
Oh, my God. We have to take a really quick break again, and we're going to come back with Mike Costello. He is with Howl for Wildlife. Their website is Howl, H-O-W-L, forwildlife.org. And, yeah, there's just so much on this. And as a taxpayer, I don't care where you live, you should care about it, because this is part of why your wallet is crying every night when you go to bed and you hear it in there whimpering in your...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Followed by a growl in the dark.
It's not good. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Look for the bare necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities, Mother Nature's recipe. Bring the bare necessities of life. Wherever I wander, wherever I roam.
If my party's all right, uh-huh. Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. You're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment we aim to be. Am I partying all right? Uh-huh. Do what you please.
Ah, yes. The Endangered Species Act reform soundtrack was written years ago by a song called My Parties by Dire Straits. I love that song. It makes me laugh every time. Okay, so back to Equal Access to Justice Act and all the craziness. How about that?
Yeah. We need reform on that, the Endangered Species Act, the Antiquities Act, and I think there's going to be an opportunity to support those things. The whole thing about contact your electeds, it's hard. People don't do it. It's hard to know when something's like, is it being decided today? Is it next week when I reach out? But these are some big issues that we can participate in, and if we get these reforms to what are probably good ideas, but they've been executed badly, and now we can fix them. It'll be good for landscapes, wildlife. It'll be good for us culturally, socially. You know, it'll just be financially. It'll be good for everybody. So they're important issues to track, I think.
Yeah, it really is, and the amount of money that is going to this sort of thing. I mean, imagine the California Department of Fish and Game Wildlife. That department has had a wolf management plan on the ground for 10 years this year. That was listed November 12th of 2015. And after 10 years, they don't know how many wolves is enough on the landscape in this state. How do you even explain that?
They don't. And so in that regard, it's time for us to start talking to the commission, and the Fish and Game Commission is really easy to talk to through email or even jumping on their meetings in Zoom and talking during public comment. Like we as a community need to start talking to the commission about the fact that this management plan hasn't been looked at significantly in 10 years, and we have an issue that's developing, and it's time to revisit the management plan, make it practical and pragmatic, and fix some things.
Well, in the original agreement or in the original plan, was there a number in that plan about how many would be right before they started culling the herd?
So lethal removal is a management tool that's considered in phase three. And that's when there's eight or more breeding pairs, and we're at five or six breeding pairs now, but we're at like 10 packs. And so I think once you get a pack in place, which is a male and a female, once they show that that's a breeding pair, so maybe a year later, we're on the cusp of having 10 packs or 10 breeding pairs, and that it's within reach. And so it's time to start moving through these phases and looking at, and even now, 10 years later, maybe the phases weren't set up right. Maybe the impacts relative to what phase that they're in weren't estimated very well because they were looking in a crystal ball that was a little foggy 10 years ago. Well, we have documentary now. We have reality now. And so they can go back to this and make some very pragmatic adjustments to it and bring lethal removal in because they don't want cattle being killed on somebody's ranch in Modoc County every other week. So lethal removal is a tool that's considered in a range of about 100 to 150 wolves on the landscape. And that's roughly where we are, we will be soon. The holding capacity that's estimated for all of Northern California, they look at it two different ways, one based on prey species and one based on geography. And that number is roughly 350. Like the center of those two estimates is about 350 animals. But that was based on the prey base 10 years ago. We don't have the same prey base as we did then.
They think that so, you need 350 wolves in North, just to, let's not gloss that over. What's the geography?
Yeah. No, that's maximum. That's like the idea, like the holding capacity, not where we would delist, but steady state, long term holding capacity for the habitat that's available to them would be about 350 wolves.
And that's just California?
Northern California, like north of Interstate 80.
I think
that's where you are, you know. But I see us eclipsing without practical management tools in place, and like it or not, the friction that a wolf pack will respond to is being shot at, is lethal removal, is seeing the dog next to them get killed. You know, they learn from loud noises and scary events. And fox lights and disco balls are not loud enough.
We all know
enough.
That the F word, fladry, yeah. is stupid.
Right. Doesn't do it. Yeah. Doesn't do it. So if we're going to have 350 wild wolves living off of the natural ecosystem, not subsidized by human foods that we provide them, there need to be some practical changes that take place. And they need to happen soon. Otherwise, every generation of new wolves that are born on this landscape are going to be developing bad habits, bad dependencies mm-hmm. on livestock.
Right.
Yeah, why not? Honestly, that's just silly. It's silly to think that you would travel hundreds of miles in the wilderness looking for, you know, bunnies and foxes and whatever to chase around when you could just scurry on down to the local rancher's backyard, right, or acreage, and mm-hmm. eat up some yummy cows.
Well, cows, sheep, mm-hmm. goats. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out there.
We interviewed the Sitaway Sheep Company 10 years ago, and a couple of wolves ran 176 sheep off a cliff. Now, granted, sheep are not the brightest.
Looking for a way to die.
Yeah, they spend their whole life finding a way to die. As we learned from the veterinarian who told us to just get a new one. We're never coming out to look at your sheep. I was like, what? But it's Eunice. We love Eunice. He's like, yeah, get a new one.
That's funny.
So, kind of sad. But, no, they're not bright. However, that's the kind of damage that is done. And that wasn't to eat them. That was just the fun of the chase. God, if you learn nothing else, that was sport. That was sport.
And it seems like, oh, no, they wouldn't do that. But I have three dogs. I have one dog that loves to chase lizards. He chases lizards. He gets them in his mouth. He kills them. And then he, licks them. And he's like, oh, what'd you do? Why'd you die? Come back. Like, why aren't you moving anymore? You were fun.
You wrecked the game.
You wrecked the game, but then that lizard stops moving. He goes on and finds another one.
Yeah,
like this is not about sustenance and protein in his belly. It is absolute sport for him to do that. And there's no reason why we should expect anything different from a group of four or five apex predators on the landscape.
But let's not put too fine a point on it, right? We are apex predators. And lest we forget, we have the Investigation Discovery Channel along with many others, and everything on there is about apex predator, human apex predators who like to kill for sport. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
So
right.
The idea that a wild animal wouldn't kill for sport, really? Like,
right.
Yeah, they yeah. totally would. I just with the Fish and Game Commission meetings in different states and stuff, do you guys link that on your website and make that available to people who sign up for your newsletter? Like, hey, there's a meeting you can plug in on this day. Do you sort of
if there's a specific issue, so our action center, if you go to our take action on our website, howlforwildlife.org, take action, you'll see right now there's probably 9 different tiles there of issues in play. And so we put issues there, whether it's legislative or in a commission setting, where people can send a message that we've researched, and we've got some value statements that make sense, we believe, that they can send to a commission or a legislative body when an issue's up in play. We don't host information from every commission or every legislature unless it's right now. Like, now's the time to take action on this. And so we kind of curate based on stakeholder feedback, local coalitions that reach out and say, hey, can you help us with this? We'd like to do a lot of research and know that we're not going to step into something without context and mess things up for the locals if we don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we host things there depending on where the fire is. You could say, where's the fire? Where's the issue? We do research. We put together value statements. And then the nice thing is now is the anti-hunting industry, they fundraise from folks in Florida to do things against Montana. They fundraise from people in New Jersey to do things against Californians. Our action center is set up so no matter what species you're interested in, say you're a duck hunter, but you want to support, mountain lion hunting in Colorado, so you can cross species, cross state lines, cross methods of take, and support other hunters, other people that are part of the natural world and their issues just by taking action. So I think you mentioned some of the other organizations in the conservation space. Most of them are species specific. You have Rocky Mountain Elk. They do great things for elk habitat. Mule Deer Foundation. They do great things for mule deer habitat. We work on advocacy issues regardless of species, regardless of method of take, whether you're a bow hunter or a trapper or a houndsman, we're going to support you. And so that's where we're not just siloed. We can start coming together as communities. And with this wolf issue, we're finding we need to bridge into and talk to the ranchers.
Yep.
Because we have very similar goals, very similar concerns. As a hunter, I want the wildlife to be okay. I want lots of deer and elk and antelope out in the landscape along with predators. But this wolf issue is not helping those deer and elk and antelope. Ranchers have the same concerns about the way the wolves are recolonizing California and what few tools they have. And so that's why we're really starting to find this commonality on some of these issues. Ranchers care about the land. We care about the land. And so that's how our action center works, is it's based on where's the issue today and how do we get stakeholders across different communities to participate and support each other.
Yeah, because you guys call it the Action Den. So I'm putting that on the front page right next to your bio. So that's like the top thing on the page. And and so people will see that, because that, honestly, you can be, you can be all informed and everything, but if you actually never lift a finger and do anything, you don't move the needle on this kind of stuff.
Right.
It just continues to go downhill.
It's hard to know where an issue is. Like, is this issue in the commission? Is this issue in a Senate committee? Is it in an assembly committee? If I contact my elected, do they even know about it?
Right. And there's nothing worse than having your activists get kicked in the teeth all the time. They make calls and it doesn't mean anything, or the people go, what are you talking about? They stop calling. So I think it's awesome that you guys give them those tools, because without that, they're ineffective.
Yeah.
And people don't do that twice. If they're going to take the time to make the call and then they get you know, kind of shut down. Besides that, don't call people that are on your team. So it's sort of nice to know, you know, where are your electeds on these things before you blow their phones up.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. And if you're a state senator who's not in favor of delisting wolves, you should be calling them a lot. A lot.
Yeah,
you're
a federal
senator, sorry.
That's not on there yet, but it's going to be.
Because
we need that. We need
our
state senators to support Californians. Because wolves are going to be in 40 counties by, you know, 5 years from now.
They will. They're absolutely absolutely going to do that. We are going to goof off with Mike again on another day, talk about stuff like this. Howl for Wildlife. .org. You got to go there.
Yeah.
So you can find the archive of the show and send it to your friends and family at wethepeoplereadio.us.
And thanks, Mike. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Great show.
No rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Oh, you know, we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good.